Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend, where we go behind the scenes and talk to the creators of independent entertainment. I'm Jason Godby, and with me in the Rabbit Hole studio today, she is an actor, writer, director, Miss Taylor Coryell. Welcome, Taylor.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Thank you for making the schlep to Brooklyn.
Of course.
We always like it when people come down here, as opposed to me traveling to them. It's so much easier because we have a studio. Anyway, thank you for coming. I wanted to jump right into it. You have a series that we want to talk about. But first, I want to learn a little bit about you. So kind of tell me about your background. How'd you get into acting, filmmaking? And, you know, what is your origin story, so to speak?
Sure. Yeah. So I started doing musical theater when I was 10 or 11. And then I went to a performing arts school. And then when I went to college for vocal performance. So my degree is in classical music and opera and musical theater. After that, I moved to New York to pursue musical theater, and sort of in doing that, I discovered comedy through going to UCB, and in moving here, I met my writing partner, and that's sort of how I got into writing and producing and directing, as well as acting.
Very cool. So who's your writing partner?
For You're the Pest, which is the show that you were mentioning earlier, her name's Jasmine Romero. She's actually a producer for Gimlet Media.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tell me a bit about You're the Pest, because that's out now.
Sure.
And you guys have been doing the festival circuit with it a bit, which is cool. I've been doing the festival circuit myself, schlepping around to a lot of festivals.
Uh-huh.
If you watch the show, you know that. talk to me, like, first of all, what is the show itself?
Sure.
And then kind of how did it come about? Like, what was the genesis of that?
Yeah, sure. So You're the Pest is a comedic web series about two former friends who take over their parents' extermination company in Queens. My writing partner, Jasmine, and I were having brunch. We live really close to each other in Astoria. And there were these dudes at a table next to us, and they were like, they had noticed that I had been studying a script before she met up with me, and they were like, oh, are you both actors? And we said, yes, obviously. And we asked them what they did, and one of them was like a fireman, and one was like a personal trainer, and then one of them said that they were an exterminator. And he didn't he didn't necessarily look like I thought in my head an exterminator would look, because you kind of think like dads, you know?
Right.
And
or like the guy from Arachnophobia. You know?
Yeah. And and so, you know, we were like, oh, that's crazy. I've never met an exterminator, which is weird because you live in New York and there's pests everywhere. And so we said, I looked at him and I was like, well, do you know any female exterminators? And he said, no. And Jasmine and I just sort of looked at each other and a light bulb went off, and we thought it would be a funny idea for a show.
So, newsflash, there are not a lot of women in the anti-bug business.
There are not.
Sure. You know, like, you thought, what if, kind of thing. So, you guys, when did this all begin? How many years in the making was this?
I think we started writing, neither one of us had ever written anything, and we were sort of sick of going in for the same types of roles over and over, and so we wanted to create something that spoke to our own voice. I was going in for like a lot of young mom roles, and she was going in for everybody just wanted her to be Sofia Vergara.
Okay.
And so we were a little sick of that, and so that's why we decided to write it. So I think that was in like 2014, and then we both kind of abandoned it a little bit because we had I like booked a show. I think she was on tour. And so then we got back to it in 2015, shot the pilot at the end of 2015, aired it in 2016. And then I was like, I produced it, and I was a little burnt out. So I took a break after we released the pilot in 2016. And then sort of around this time last year was when I was like, okay, it's time to pick this back up. And I fundraised the rest of what we needed to make it. And we shot the next six episodes of season one last December. And then we aired them earlier this year in April and May.
Did you use crowdfunding to get it off the ground? Or did you, pillage from relatives and friends and stuff?
No, we crowdfunded.
Okay. How was that experience for you?
I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, to be
really?
Honest. I hate crowdfunding so much.
Well, so we crowdfunded in 2015. And then after we released the pilot, we had just a couple of people. You know, we were fiscally sponsored by Fractured Atlas. So we sort of had a fund open if somebody wanted to contribute. And we got a couple of larger donations after we released the pilot. And so I sort of sat on that for a little while trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And then, yes, last year we crowdfunded on Seed and Spark, which I loved doing. They are a great community, and they're really helpful. They help you tailor how you want to reach your audience. And if you look at it like that, instead of asking people for money, which always feels so strange, if you look at it as you're looking for the people who want to see what you're making, who are interested in the types of things that you do and what your voice is, whether you're a comedy writer or if you're a documentarian or anything like that, crowdfunding is a great way, even though it's very difficult and time-consuming. It's a great way to find your audience, because once you have that base of an audience, you'll never have to you'll never have to start from scratch again.
And did that work for you guys? Like, once you released the show, did you get a lot of people who were the people who were giving you money? Were they the people sharing your show online? Mm-hmm. And so you were able to kind of build a community around the show.
Absolutely.
I think that's a part of the. We did a show on crowdfunding with my friend John Trigonis, mm-hmm. who wrote a book on it. And, you know, he always says that the crowd comes before the funding.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
Like the funding is sort of a byproduct of building an audience.
Yep.
But building an audience is no small feat either.
No.
I mean, I'm on this show and, you know, we've been building the audience gradually since we started. Mm-hmm. But would you say that the crowdfunding part of it, was that the biggest challenge, or were there other sort of obstacles along the way that you had to conquer?
Was it the biggest, you're saying, is it the biggest obstacle of...
Of getting it made?
Yeah, I would. It was my first project as a writer with Jasmine and then also as a producer. And so when it's your first thing, you don't have anything to show anybody else. So they don't know. They don't know, like, what you're capable of. And honestly, at that point, I didn't really know, like, if I could do it at all either, and how, if it would look how I wanted it to look, and if it would come out and come across how I wanted it to look. So
yeah, it's one of those things, you don't know you can do it until you do do it.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
You just have to roll up your sleeves and figure it out.
Can I fly if I jump off this cliff?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. With the production of
that
it.
That sounds like a horrible idea.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I think it's a good analogy for filmmaking.
No, definitely, definitely. Especially on your first...
Yeah,
project,
your first
sure.
time out, it's always, I mean, I know my first film was kind of a disaster at first and had to be rebuilt. And, you know, when young people tell me, I want to do this thing, I'm like, mm-hmm. wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much planning have you done?
Mm-hmm.
Have you written this to something that's like, you know, you can make, as mm-hmm. opposed to, you know, something that you've seen that you think you can make?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think a lot of people get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, nowadays with television, we did the New York Television Festival. I just did IFP Week this year.
Sure.
And been learning about pitching TV and what they're looking for. And oftentimes, you know, when you have a series, it's a different route because you've already produced this thing mm-hmm. and it's already online, as opposed to I wrote a script,
just
I'm trying
idea.
To pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So, and putting a pitch deck together and trying to raise money through a mm-hmm. network and stuff. So it's a different roundabout sort of thing. And I feel like web series these days... It depends on where you are,
mm-hmm.
But it can be a nice resume because, like you
Absolutely.
Said, you haven't had anything before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like even if you did want to pitch it somewhere, they'd say, oh, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
And people give me, like, it's a strange, like, a comedic web series about two former friends who take over their parents' extermination company in Queens. Like,
right.
a lot of people, like, laugh, and then they're like, what does that look like? And I'm
right.
like, well, now you can watch.
You know, I've seen the show, and I liked it. I thought, who's your co-star?
My co-star, Adriana DiGirolami.
Right, whose name I can never pronounce right.
It's long.
She's
long
you
in
guys,
Italian.
I think, were you guys friends previously?
No, actually, Jasmine and I wrote the show, and originally Jasmine, we thought might play that role, and then she moved off into a sort of a different career track, and so we were like, okay, we need to find a Marissa. And our director for the pilot, Chris Beyer, went to NYU with Audrey, and he I brought him on to help develop the script after Jasmine and I had finished, and we were looking for Marissa, and we knew it had to be somebody who I had a good chemistry with, because I still wanted to be able to play Alex. And So he brought her in for a read, and we just clicked immediately.
That's tough. I think that's another thing people don't realize, because you have the two best. You could have the two best actors in the world, mm-hmm. and then you get them together, and there's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I've had that. I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, why are these two people on screen? You know. But you guys, I think you guys do seem like. That's why I thought you had collaborated with her in the beginning, because you guys you're so good on screen together.
Right. Well, after we brought Audrey on. You know, we took the script, Chris and I took the script into a, sort of a rehearsal room with Audrey, and as I went through that process and read it out loud with her, and we worked with him directing us, I would take it after our rehearsals, and I would go back and sort of tinker with it to sort of fit her voice more, because she and Jasmine have a lot of the similar sensibilities, but I think Marissa the character of Marissa has gone a little bit in a different direction than it did originally.
Because you let the actor inform the character. I think that's good too. And I know, well, it's different, right? Because if mm-hmm. you like Michael Caine said in his book, movies are made, plays are performed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you have a play, it's the writer's medium and it's that mm-hmm. character forever.
Yes.
You know, Blanche DuBois is Blanche DuBois in every
right.
production. But if you're going to be on camera and you're writing it and you have that cast and you can tailor it writing-wise, you're going to get such a more natural performance mm-hmm. out of the person rather than trying to kind of squeeze them into this suit that you made.
For sure.
Kind of thing. What I always ask this question, and sometimes not always an easy question to answer, but for you, because, you know, it's not like this is old hat for you and you've been doing this for 20 years.
Right.
But since having this experience a few years ago and to where you are now, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give yourself? I told you it wasn't easy.
Yeah, it is a hard question, because there's nothing I would change about how long it took to make the first season. In some ways, I mean, obviously I wish it hadn't taken the last 4 years, but I'm glad that it did, because my taste has evolved over that time. But I think what I would say, if I could go back, would be to trust my gut more about my own taste, and about TV is a TV is like the creator's medium, you know, like there are famous showrunners now, you know, like you think about like Shonda Rhimes or someone like that, like her shows are her vision. And so I've always been a big collaborator. I like having people who are smarter than me in the room, because I think it makes me better. I learn from them. I don't like coming into any experience not ready to learn from people. But to that same, you know, point, you have to trust what it is that you saw in your head. And there are many times on this that I've on this project that I've like questioned what I thought and whether or not I was making the right decision, or for music, or for hiring new people, or
second guessing
like
yourself.
Just quitting, like just trusting my taste, and realizing that maybe it wouldn't be what somebody else does, but it's what makes my stuff unique.
Well, also, you know, as a writer, because you know, this is a new thing for you. Mm-hmm. Like you've been an actor, but you know, and you know that happens to actors. There's this trend now where actors are creating their own stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But not every actor is a great writer.
True.
And it takes practice.
It does.
You know, like if people tell me I'm a good writer, and I say I ought to be. I've been doing it for like 25 years.
Right.
You know, but when you first starting out, I think that is hard.
Yeah.
Because what the hell do you know? When you know you have this thing, like, and a little bit of that imposter syndrome mm-hmm. can kind of kick in there, and you're like, oh, I'm not J.J. Abrams, you
sure.
know, like, or whatever.
Well, and in that same way, that's why I always said along this whole throughout the whole process, I said I have to find people who I admire their work and who have that same collaborative spirit, where they don't want to make me feel dumb, but they're gonna give it to me straight and tell me what they think, what's possible, what's not, anything like that, you know. So I always wanted to have those people around me, and I think it definitely made this whole process like a great learning experience, and also a great way for me to develop as a writer.
Right, and that's like young wisdom, you mm-hmm. know. And I feel like, no offense, but the biggest problem with your generation is that they don't do that. They think they know everything, and they try to do it themselves, and they suffer as a result. Because
it's funny you say that, because I don't find that to be true with a lot of the people that I work with. I think people are just the loudest ones who ruin it for the rest of us.
That could be it. That could. I mean, I've seen that with people that I've tried to work with me.
Sure.
But I also,
oh, I see it. I'm
the type of person that, you know, if somebody brings me a project, I'm like, this is what's possible. This is, you know, mm-hmm. and it usually all comes down to money. I don't know how much money you had to play with for this, but I'm thinking that, you know, you didn't have millions to deal with per episode.
Not, no.
So, you know, you always have to like stretch the dollar and try to make it work. And not everybody wants to kind of accept that, you know, but with this show, because it's a good show, I think it's well written. I think it's well done. And the point of it is that you kind of made it simple enough mm-hmm. to make it good, so that because the show is essentially these two people, mm-hmm. you know, and when you have two good actors and decent writing, it's a good show. Like, you don't need special effects. There's no car chases or anything like that in it, or big stunts or mm-hmm. anything. So it doesn't take tons of money mm-hmm. to make something that works.
Yeah.
And I think you guys, was that when you guys were writing it initially, were you thinking like producers and going like, we can't put that in there because we're never going to get enough money to do it? Or were you kind of, was that sort of like, we have to rewrite based on reality because of what we have budget-wise?
Well, I would say that when Jasmine and I started writing it, that we wrote the show that we believed in the most. And I've, ever since we wrote this, you know, the first season of this and we've produced it and everything, I've been brought on board to help a lot of other creators with their scripts and to work on their own projects. And so the first thing I always tell them, because a lot of people jump to that and they say, well, I don't know if I'm gonna have the money to do it. And I'm like, write your dream script, write your perfect show, write your perfect script, and then we will see what we can make happen. If you're scrappy and if you can think creatively, that's one of the things I like best about low budget things, is that it forces you to think creatively. And I think that that's what is so cool about indie TV right now. You know, I'm going to all these festivals with the show and I'm seeing these like really innovative ideas that people have that they're making for like no money. And it's like, you hear all the time, there's no new ideas. Well, then you're not watching anything that's being independently produced.
Well, there's probably not that many new, I don't know if there's any new stories left, but there are new ways to tell them.
Absolutely.
And I think you can find them. And I think I've been in the no-budget game for, and it's exhausting.
It's so, you know, so exhausting.
If somebody gives me a budget, I'm like, thank you, God. But it does force you to be creative.
Yeah.
Like, you have to, you know what? No, we don't have this, but we can do this. Yeah,
but we can make the best of it.
Mm-hmm. It's just about making the best of your resources. And, you know, like with you, it's, you knew that, like, whatever it comes down to, it's about these two women.
Yeah.
And if I have these two women and they're making people laugh and the relationship is real, mm-hmm. then I got a good show.
Yeah.
So everything else is like sort of, you know, dressing. It's icing on top kind of thing.
The one thing with this show that we had was the extermination stuff. And for a little while, I remember Jasmine looked at me and she's like, where are we going to get this thing? And I was like, we'll figure it out. And honestly, it was such a lucky moment when I went and I looked in Astoria. I knew I wanted to shoot the show in Astoria because nobody ever sets anything. Like, people shoot in Astoria, but they never set anything there. And so I was like, we have to shoot this whole thing there. It's my neighborhood. I love it. And so I started looking around at, like, pest control places that, you know, I could reach out to and be like, can we borrow equipment from you? Can you teach us how to use it? Like, any of that stuff. And we...
Hopefully without killing yourself.
Yeah.
Because it's like toxic chemicals.
There's like toxic chemicals. They didn't give me any chemicals, but they gave us
good.
Like the,
okay.
You know...
you weren't actually trying to kill rodents and insects.
No.
Oh, that's good.
But we really, really lucked out with Standard Pest Management, which is where we shot, like, 4 out of the 7 days that we shot was with these people in Queens. And, you know, Gil, the guy who owns it, was extremely generous with his knowledge and his time and stuff. And you know, the first time we walked in, I walked in with my co-producer and my director for the season, Adrienne Lovett, and we just looked at it, and it was just, like, it was so lived in. It's a family company, and, you know, they had, like, the light switch plates on the wall had bugs on them, and, like, they're, like, all of these little, like, like insect and rodent toys, and they had posters up, and like there was no way I could have ever gotten that with like a breather space and set dressing. It was just like it was
not
so
that would
perfect.
Have taken you a year to dress.
Yeah,
you know,
I
like,
mean, and so it was just it was so perfect.
That's
and,
a great idea. To yeah. just you know like and it and were they into it? Were they like yes,
so
we need
it.
A show about
they
exterminators.
Were so into it. They were so into it. And that's Gil awesome. Still Gil, you know he we communicate every once in a while and. The pest control community has been very accepting. I did a podcast, you know, a couple months ago. That's all. It was like two guys who are exterminators who have this podcast, and they were just like, "Do you want to come on the show and talk about you're the pest?" And I was like, "You know, I'm not like a real exterminator, right? Like, I can't answer any like really technical questions."
But that's awesome, though. Yeah. I mean, you guys are like the Wonder Women of exterminators. You
yeah.
know, like,
oh,
that's
thank you.
That's a you know you're breaking new ground.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's what makes the show original. You know, because you're not doing you know a show about two actors or something.
Yeah,
it's and.
And they always say, sorry to interrupt, but
yeah, go ahead.
You know, people always say when you're writing something and it's your first thing, write what you know. And absolutely. But when you boil down You're the Pest, yes, it has all these trappings of being about exterminators. And Marissa is a former Miss New York, and Alex failed out of the police academy. But when you get down to the nitty gritty of what that show is about, it's about two people who are in their late 20s. Who are sitting here being like, okay, well, the thing that I've always wanted, I've either accomplished or I don't have the opportunity to do it anymore. What do I do now? And to me, that was something that's universal in people that are my age. In their late 20s, early 30s, you're sitting here being like, okay, well, you know, I moved to New York to be an actor and it's not going well. And I don't think I want to be an actor anymore. What do I want to do now? Am I failing because I, you know, because my dream didn't work out or because my dream has changed for what I want. And I think I am writing what I know. It's just I put on an extermination suit just
well, I think
to make
that's,
it silly.
That, I think it's good, too, because that's the central theme that, you know, carries everything through. Like, I remember when I was writing one of my first plays, one of the first things I ever wrote, every time I got stuck on the, you know, in the second act or whatever, mm-hmm. I'd just be like, what is it about? Oh, it's about friendship. It's about these three mm-hmm. guys trying to do something or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and that always brought it back home.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, I think that's another thing people don't realize when they start to write is like, what are you writing about?
Right.
And what are the human relationships in it? Because if we don't care about those people, mm-hmm. we don't care about your show.
Exactly.
You know, and the laughs don't mean anything.
Right.
It's like when you have an elaborate action sequence, but you don't know who the characters are. You're like, I don't know who to root for. It's like watching a Transformers
right.
movie. It's like, you know, you see these big two CGI things, and you're like, but they don't have any characters. Is that the good one? Or is that the bad one?
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So like, but you guys, at the heart of it is that relationship mm-hmm. and these two people. And it's a coming of age story in a way, I guess.
It's coming of age, you know, it's.
A quarter life crisis, I think they call it.
Sure,
you know.
Quarter life crisis. Yeah. And, you know, their friendship definitely is very central. The idea of, like, what does it mean to create a family for yourself when yours isn't around anymore? Those are all things that I know. You know, I'm from Kentucky. My family lives 1,000 miles away. I don't get to see them. But I have, like, a community of friends here that I rely on, you know?
And that's a genuine New York theme. Like,
absolutely.
I don't know any New Yorker that hasn't had to do that. I have a family of people here. I don't see my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you're in the creator community,
mm-hmm.
like, you need those people.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, one day they're buying you a beer when you're sad, and the next day they're holding the boom mic for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Sure.
Anyway, I'm going to wrap up shortly. But sure. Tell us what else do you have on the horizon? What other upcoming projects can people find you in?
Sure. Well, other than You're the Pest, which you should all check out, I'm actually currently in the beginning of an off-Broadway run of The Office of Musical Parody at the Jerry Orbach in Manhattan.
Who do you play in that?
Pam.
Perfect.
That's the best. Super funny. We just started previews, and so it's an open-ended run, so that's going on for a while. And then I'm directing a short in October, and You're the Pest is going to ITV Fest in Vermont in these next couple weeks, so I'm looking to be able to pitch it there, as well as two other scripts that I have, one with actually Audrey, who is my co-star in You're the Pest, and then one that I'm writing on my own.
Fabulous. You know, I wish you a lot of luck with that stuff.
Thank you.
I think, you know, one of these days I'll get up to Vermont to check that out.
Yeah.
Right now, we're in New York, so we've been covering festivals
sure.
that are around town, but that's definitely one I want to check out.
Well, we just got into NYC Web Fest.
Fabulous.
Surprise.
Fabulous. It's been doing well on the web, on the circuit so
yeah.
far.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
So check if people want to check out You're the Pest, where can they find it?
You'rethepestseries.com.
And if they want to find you on the web, if they want to hire you or just admire you or stalk you, where can they find you online?
My website is taylorcoriel.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at FrecklySoprano1.
Awesome. So that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for taking this trip down the rabbit hole, as always. No rest of the weekend, if you want to find more episodes of this show, you can always find them on our website, btrp.nyc. We're also on YouTube and Facebook. And you can find us on all the major podcast channels if you're a listener. So Anchor, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, et cetera, all those fun places you like to listen to podcasts. Once again, I'd like to thank my guest, Taylor Coriel. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And for Behind the Rabbit Productions, I'm Jason Godby. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.